This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, thanks for being here. A lot of things going on to talk about around the Umpqua Valley, but still a lot of interest statewide and the Oregon State Legislature, even though the session's been done for about 10 days now. But we're going to check in with State Representative Ed Deal from the Sweet Home area. Kind of go a couple directions today. He was one of the chief petitioners of getting that gas tax on the referendum for November. But now the legislature at this point has moved it to May, and I know there's been some legal wrangling since the end of the session. Representative Deal, thanks for being on. Tell us where things stand with that right now.
You bet, Kyle, and thanks for having me. So, yeah, there were two lawsuits brought. First off, I was a plaintiff, along with Senator Bruce Starr and Jason Williams of Taxpayers and about 36 other Oregonians from all around the state, basically making a constitutional and legal challenge against the bill, Senate Bill 1599, that moved the referendum from November to May. It not only moved it, it also had to bypass several statutes and timelines to even make this thing happen. So we presented a very comprehensive argument opposed to that bill and opposed to the move, and on constitutional grounds, on civil rights grounds, a bunch of things. And unfortunately, the judge dismissed all of our arguments. It was unbelievable. And I got to say, if it felt unjust to ram that bill down everybody's throat to begin with and then have it moved and then have the judge basically dismiss these solid arguments, it's no wonder Oregonians feel like the system is stacked against them. And that's why we're continuing this fight and why I'm running for governor.
So why was it so important for you and the other folks along with you that this stay as a vote for November?
Well, first off, that is what the petition said. When we submitted our request to do a referendum, we asked for it on the November ballot. When over a quarter million Oregonians signed the petition, they signed a petition that said for the November ballot. So we feel having the legislature step in after the fact, after the signatures were already submitted and we were certified for the November ballot, to have the legislature step back in and say, hey, we're going to move it. And oh, by the way, we're going to bypass a bunch of rules. Oh, and you won't have enough time to submit arguments in the voter pamphlet. And we're going to write the explanatory statement instead of having a neutral party do that. That is an outrage. That is an outrage. That is a direct affront on the rights of citizens and the referendum process. And so, we feel it's really unjust, and that's why we pushed this lawsuit so hard. Unfortunately, we lost, and we had to make a difficult decision not to appeal the case.
Yeah, and talk about why you decided not to appeal.
Well, two things. One, we looked what were our chances at the next higher court, and we didn't feel that they were any better than what we were going to. We didn't get a fair hearing in the Marion County Court, and we didn't think we were going to get a fair hearing at the next level up. And plus, these lawsuits cost money. And we simply decided, you know, do we spend our money fighting this in court in a futile effort, or do we spend our money making sure that people are aware this is on the May ballot and that we make sure it is soundly defeated and people vote no? So that's what we decided to do.
So
that
if
said, there's some stuff going on at the federal level.
And tell us about that.
Yeah, so what our attorney is looking at, first off, there was a somewhat successful case in federal court. Mary Martin sued the Secretary of State. Mary's a lady I know from Klamath Falls, a big supporter of mine. She also is disabled, and she filed a lawsuit saying the Secretary of State was violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by not giving her enough time to gather signatures to put an argument in the voter pamphlet. The federal judge, in a limited order, basically agreed and said, it looks like the Secretary of State is violating the ADA. I'm going to let Mary Martin put her voter pamphlet argument in without a fee and without a signature requirement, but only Mary Martin. So we took that as a win. But we're also looking, what about these other folks that have tried to submit arguments and were also denied? So our attorney is also looking at handling that as well. And we'll see where that goes.
Now, if it stays at May and none of this goes through, it sounds, though, like you still have a pretty heavy confidence level that that your measure will make it through. And do you kind of end up with the same result then?
Yeah, we're confident whether it's now called Measure 120. We're confident that Measure 120, whether it's in November or May, will fail, meaning these tax and fee increases will not go into effect, whether it's in May or November. So we're confident of that. And then our job, and I will do that as your Republican candidate for governor, we will remind voters every day until November what Governor Kotek did, how she rammed this through despite widely unpopular, even knowing it was widely unpopular, and then she moved it. And so we will remind voters from here until November about what she did.
Do you feel like that's going to really help the Republicans out in the election cycle?
I think that it will. I really do. We are confident that we will have one of the highest record Republican turnouts in a long time for a number of reasons. One is because of the referendum. The other is people have just had enough. They have just had enough. And I'm hearing this not just from Republicans, but non-affiliated voters and Democrats who are not happy with Kotek's leadership or lack thereof and desperately want change. We are being taxed to death in this state, regulated to death in this state. People want a state where their kids and grandkids will stay and live and raise their families. Instead, they're seeing their kids and grandkids leave.
So while all of this is going on, are there any updates in terms of the Oregon Department of Transportation itself?
Well, Department of Transportation is moving along. The winter road maintenance has been, I believe, staffed at the same level it has been in prior years. What has not happened is really revisiting ODOT and adjusting priorities to make sure that road safety and maintenance is adequately funded for the long haul. The governor had an opportunity to deal with that in the short session, but instead she decided to move the referendum date. So all this energy went into moving the date instead of fixing the real problems within ODOT, which is a shame. So those problems are still there, and I think it'll be up to the next governor to resolve them.
And good transition. Let's talk about that race for governor. You're in the midst of that in the primary while you're dealing with all these other things as well.
Yeah.
How do you feel like your campaign is going so far?
We feel great. We feel great. We are making I'm a road warrior right now. I'm pulled off to the side of the road, actually, between meetings to talk to you. But we were out meeting with people. We did a debate over the weekend in Coos Bay. I had several other meetings in Eugene, Florence, and Brookings. We've got events going on in the Portland metro area as well. Just really all over the state. We have got a few trips lined up to Eastern Oregon. But we feel really good about it. We have some polling results that really show us dominating the polls, which is great, but we know we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, talk more about the polling and what came out recently on that.
Yeah, so this was a self, what do you call it? It was basically people opted in to take this poll. It was done via email and online, and what it showed, there were over 1,000 likely voters, and it showed that about 66% of those voters would vote for Deal in the Republican primary. So that is a very dominating position. Everyone else was down in the mud, basically. So we feel very confident about that. It shows us that our message is resonating with folks, reducing taxes, reducing the regulatory burden. And really, you know, my vision for Oregon is not only to be the most beautiful state in the country, but have the state that is the greatest place to live, work, raise a family, and retire, in a place where your kids and grandkids can stay and not feel compelled to leave to find a better job. That's our vision, and I know we can do it with the right leadership.
If you get through the primary and are the GOP candidate, how do you approach the general election? Is there a particular strategy?
You know, we look at numbers, and we see that there are a significant number of Republicans that have not been voting in prior gubernatorial elections. And we see a lot of conservative-leaning, non-affiliated voters that are also not voting. Our job and our challenge is to reach out to those voters. We know who they are, and to give them a reason to vote. And we're going to do that by showing exactly how we can beat Tina Kotek, and sharing our vision for a future of Oregon that is actually working for them. Because right now, you know, a lot of people just don't feel hope. They feel it's lost, that their vote doesn't matter. But I think the referendum gave a lot of those folks hope for the first time in a long time that they can stand up and push back against a government that really is not working for them anymore, is not representing them anymore. And I want to be that voice. I am that voice for those people, and that's the majority of Oregonians. So if we can reach out to them, and I will work that like nobody's business, we can win that election, and that's what I'll do.
State Representative Ed Deal is on with us. We're talking about his Republican primary race right now. What are you hearing from Oregonians in particular? You talked about traveling, going around a lot of locations. Are you hearing kind of common themes?
There are a lot of common themes. We talk about an urban-rural divide, and there's definitely a divide there. But I'm focused on the issues that unite us, and these are big, substantive issues. For one, the economy and affordability. No matter where I go, people are feeling the burden of taxes. They do not feel like they're getting value for that. And that comes down to four decades of one-party governance over our agencies. So I'm committed to 100% audit on every government agency, setting new priorities, and putting leadership in place that will make those agencies work for the people, with the priorities aligned with the people. Homelessness, whether I'm in downtown Portland talking to a business that had to shutter its doors, or down in Brookings, homelessness is a real issue. We are spending billions of dollars on a homeless problem. We're simply enabling it. We can change that. We can save money and also reduce the homelessness problem. Another big issue is with education. I can go to some of the poorest parts of the state and the wealthiest parts of the state. They are complaining about our public education system failing our kids. That, again, is accountability, getting back to basics within our schools, accountability, discipline, and excellence. And then agency overreach. You know, I've talked to businesses in downtown Portland. I've talked to cattlemen in eastern Oregon. They'll both complain about the overreach of DEQ, fighting against burdensome regulations that really aren't in line with what everybody would accept as common sense for clean air and clean water. We've set up barriers to progress and growth that are driving business out of this state. Those things unite us, whether we're in downtown Portland or eastern Oregon, and I want to focus on those things. And I believe my business background and my legislative background make me uniquely positioned to do that.
Now, you jumped into this race a ways in. How has fundraising been going at this point?
It's going good. I still have a lot of work to do on that front. So we're continuing to look for donations and investors. I call them investors because they are investing in Oregon. So I'm behind a couple of my opponents on that front. But despite that, I'm doing really well as far as voter opinion, public opinion goes. So we feel very confident in the outcome here. So I'm just going to continue to raise money. That will help us when it comes to getting the information out on radio and television and, you know, all the search engines, all that. We know we need to raise money to do that.
If you were ultimately elected as governor and you were able to walk in to Salem, back into Salem in that role, what would you be kind of doing as your top few priorities, you know, and just almost immediately?
Well, definitely calling for those 100% audits on the agencies. In many cases, I will be replacing agency heads to put people in that actually align with the values of the people of Oregon and will reset those agency priorities. Another thing is I'll be repealing executive orders that have driven up our electricity costs, have driven up our cost of fuel, driven up our costs of natural gas. There's a number of executive orders that I'd be repealing. Another thing I would do is, within my executive power ability, restore a basic level of cooperation between law enforcement and the federal government so that we can work together to get criminal elements out of this state and out of the country. We are, by our laws, we are harboring gang members, prostitution ringleaders, and human traffickers in this state. And we have to, at some basic level, allow our law enforcement to cooperate with the federal government and take care of that plague that's afflicting Oregon.
If you were in as governor and not much changed in the legislature, you'd be facing a very heavy, democratically controlled legislature. Is that kind of a recipe for a lot of headbutting?
Well, it could be. You know, once I'm elected as governor, that is like that's an earthquake across the country. It'll be 4 decades to the inauguration day that we have not had a Republican government. That alone sends a strong message that there is a mandate for change in this state. So I will look to form alliances around policy. And I'll work with anybody around policy, whether they're Republican or Democrat. So I'll look for those bipartisan alliances. I also have the ability to veto, and I can line item veto. But what I will do is set an agenda that is about accountability, affordability, and a thriving economy in this state. I will establish that agenda, and I will work with everybody and anybody that is aligned with that. And it's not going to be easy. I know there'll be resistance, but I also know even within the Democrat Party, there are a lot of factions there. There are groups within the party that are more like-minded than I am when it comes to business. And I will do my best to find those places where we can get alignment between those, say, moderate Democrats and the Republicans.
You mentioned the business issue, and that's one of the things we've been hearing a lot about with the recent departure of, you know, some companies or companies partially moving to other locations, things like that. How do you turn that around?
You know, what you do is you have to have a governor that prioritizes business and that understands business. We have a governor that's never, I don't think she's ever worked in private industry in her life. She spent her career in politics. So it starts at the top, and then you have to have an understanding and appreciation for the impact that onerous regulation has on business and that we're in a competitive environment for business. So as governor, I will work to recruit business to our state, but most importantly, I will work with existing businesses to identify their roadblocks, and I know most of them already, but identify those and work to remove those regulatory barriers and agency barriers that are forcing them to move out of the state. There is no reason why businesses can't be in Oregon and be competitive nationally and internationally. But we have some very onerous laws that I'll talk about DEQ, our tax structure with the cap tax, regulations that make labor extremely expensive in this state. There's a lot of things we can work on to make our state more competitive and more friendly for business.
Do you feel like the state's land use planning system is part of that as well?
I do think it's part of it as well. You know, we have a landmark land use system was put in place 50 years ago. You know, I tell folks that was not written on a stone tablet. The whole idea was to regulate the pace of growth, but we still need to have growth. I want my kids and grandkids to be able to live in Oregon and have a house with a yard, not live in a multi-story apartment complex. And what that means is we have to just have some pragmatic, common sense approaches to our urban growth boundaries and understand that we should look at those and revisit those as we grow, but do it at a modest pace. I'm not looking to have sprawl like Texas or Arizona, but we do need to acknowledge that we have a demand for homes, we have growing families, and I want to be able to have a place for my kids and grandkids to live in Oregon.
If you don't win the primary, then what?
If I don't win the primary, then I'm going to rally behind whoever does come out of the primary. I think that's important for every candidate to do so. I've made that commitment. I think every candidate has.
And as we wrap up our time on Inside Douglas County, if people want to find out more about your campaign, where do they get connected?
You bet, Kyle. If you go to my website, eddiehl.com, that's eddiehl.com, you can learn more about me. You can go there and donate. You can also connect to me on social media and follow my newsletter. Thank you.
All right. State Representative Ed Diehl wrapping up Inside Douglas County, 1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.